Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. We've got Alan here with us.
Bag it up. I got to stop.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like it as the official sign off, but I don't know if the sign on should be bag it up as well.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's a compulsion. I apologize.
I mean, it could kind of make sense at the end. You're bagging it up.
But I open my mouth to say it before I even know. Like I open my mouth, and then like as the breath is coming up, I'm like, what bag pun can I make?
And it's always bag it up.
Yeah, it always just goes, bag it up.
Yeah, we might need to work on your bag pun game a little bit.
Oh, I've got one for the end.
Oh, good. Excellent. I can't wait until the end now.
It again, won't make any sense.
This is part two after yesterday's part one, where me, Joe Dog, and Jimmy TV talked some Game of Thrones. Alan and I will be discussing, as I teased yesterday, if anyone listened. First, we'll be discussing some Iron Man 3. I think he's going to try to sell me on going to see it, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
If it was any good.
Oh, God, yes.
And, of course, we will then transition into the delightful Mad Men talk, as we usually do. So, Iron Man 3, you saw an advanced screening last
Yes,
night.
Entertainment Weekly has what their first annual, what they're calling Cape Town Fest, going on up in Hollywood. And it's just like a week of promoting superhero movies, just like sci-fi and geek love in general. And they're doing, like, I think they're doing a screening of Scott Pilgrim tonight with a bunch of the cast. But last night, we got, it was for Entertainment Weekly subscribers and, I don't know, anyone, I guess, who got emails from them. But they started off, they showed us a bunch of old 60s Iron Man cartoons, which were hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you can find those on YouTube if you ever want to have a good laugh.
Excellent.
They are just dated and cheesy as hell. But and then Kevin Feige, who I didn't know how that's how you pronounce his name, the president of Marvel, did like a Q&A, not a Q&A, but like an interview in front of the audience, and then they showed the movie. So it was cool. He talked about kind of leading up to this movie and where he felt like Marvel would be going from there. So just the experience of it was great, and then I enjoyed the movie very much. As I said, it was written and directed by Shane Black, who's someone who I loved growing up. And what's really cool about him is that he was pretty much one of the architects of, like, all the 90s stereotypes of action movies. Like, mm-hmm. You remember how, like, cop movies were the thing?
Yeah, then? Exactly. I mean, he wrote a bunch of Lethal Weapons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he created Lethal Weapons. I don't know if he continued to work on them afterwards. I think he just got story credit, maybe. But, yeah, he created Lethal Weapon and The Long Kiss Goodnight and The Last Boy Scout, one of my underrated favorite Bruce Willis movies. But what's funny about him is, like, he sets up all those stereotypes. He kind of created them. And then in this movie and another one of my favorites, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was the first movie that he wrote and directed.
And Robert Downey Jr. also starred in that, too.
Yes, well. Which apparently was that role is what got him cast as Iron Man. That's what put him on Marvel's radar to be cast as Tony Stark. And as you'll see, this movie is very very similar writing style. But in this movie and in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, he kind of tears down and makes fun of a lot of those cliches. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funny that he has a sense of humor about his life's work and kind of tears him down. But if I need to give you any more reasons to see it, I think just because what Marvel is doing right now hasn't been done before, you should go see it. But if that's not enough, I think just seeing it as a sequel to the Avengers to see how, because I think that we can agree that Avengers was awesome. If you don't, you can go to hell. But to just kind of see a follow up of how the events of that movie affected the individual characters. We're going to be seeing a lot of that. And this movie did a good job of kind of getting deeper, almost deeper inside Tony Stark's head than we've ever seen, and kind of just getting to see his reaction to how the events of that movie changed his life forever. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great that they did that. And
How would it compare to the two other Iron Man movies, not including the Avengers, since that was a whole different beast?
Yeah, it was clearly leaps and bounds better than Iron Man 2, which was
god awful.
Yeah, that was pretty. You know, when I saw it again on Avengers Day, I liked it a little bit more, but still not a good movie. Just a waste. It's hell of a lot better than that movie, and I don't know if I would say it's a better Iron Man movie than the first one, but it's. Mm-hmm. I might even say it's a better movie.
Okay.
I think it has a stronger start to finish than Iron Man, where I think the third act of Iron Man is kind of, as cool as Iron Man was, I think the third act of it kind of fell all the way back into just your usual superhero
comic booky sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this one is different. It's hard to compare, so it'll be interesting to see how people. React to it. And so anyway, just as a sequel to Avengers and as the first movie that's setting off Marvel's Phase 2, which Feige talked about, that he wanted Phase 2 to be about, he said that their goal for Phase 1, for all the movies leading up to Avengers, was to be able to convince the audience that all these movies were taking place in the same world. Mm-hmm. And see if he could thread them, because really that hasn't, as silly as it sounds, something like this really hasn't been done before ever.
Well, it's a lot of different movies. I mean, they're all franchises too. It's not as if they're like kind of sequels where you just build on the last one.
Yeah,
they're all their own separate movies and entities. So
that can move away from each other and come together. And I think that's really cool. And that is what he said the goal of Phase 2 is going to be to show that these people can be in their standalone movies again, that they can have their own separate stories. Cause, and I was skeptical, and I'm interested to see how the rest of them play out too, because what I'm thinking ahead of seeing these movies is, well, if what's happening in this movie is such a big deal, why don't the Avengers just assemble again? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be cool to see what they're all up to and why they aren't all together. And if they don't, or maybe they will get together a little bit.
The Iron Man franchise, I think, is the strongest standalone franchise of the Marvel movies. I mean, under the Marvel wing, under the, I guess, now Disney wing, you know, not X-Men or Spider-Man. So, I mean, clearly, you know, if Iron Man 3 isn't going to be any good, then, you know, who cares about any of the other ones, you know, because Iron Man... I was initially skeptical of the first Iron Man, and I was very surprised. I thought it was a very good movie, very good comic book movie, and then, of course, the second one stunk. So
the thing about these movies that I find, like, movies like that you always go in, these kind of adventure movies that you're going in expecting garbage and you end up loving it, I feel like it's always the same thing. It's because of unexpected comedy. Not always, not like with the Batmans, but with these movies... And even the first Pirates. You remember when you went to go see that?
I don't think I actually saw that in the theater.
Well, you did see it.
Yes,
eventually.
I did see it, yes.
I mean, you know, you don't expect Johnny Depp to drop that, like, nuclear performance on you that's so awesome.
That's true.
And I wasn't expecting it to be that funny, and that was how I felt about Iron Man and Avengers, too. I had no idea how hilarious it was going to be. And that's the other reason I was going to bring up why you should see this. This movie... quite often reaches Avengers level comedy.
Okay.
It's very funny, and the cast is cool. Ben Kingsley is fucking awesome in it.
So Kingsley making a rise again.
Yes.
After some pretty shitty performances in some other movies.
Has he been doing some shit stuff? Oh, he was
in Prince of Persia, which was...
I was going to say, I've never seen that movie, but last year I was at a doctor's office in the waiting room. They had one of those, like, kids' book version those movies where it's just like, you know, they condense the movie into like 16 pages and make it so that like a 8-year-old can read it.
Yeah.
And I went through it and was just like, ugh, man, is terrible.
It was some solid movieage right there.
Yeah.
Before we move on, how about Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in the Iron Man? Because I think we can both agree that he basically mailed it in for Avengers. I mean, he wasn't, I mean, maybe not mailed it in is the right word, but like, he was not engaged, let's say. You know, he was not, it wasn't like we were getting Robert Downey Jr. to speak, you know. He, I mean, most of the scenes he had were in the suit, you know, or
I don't agree with that. Really? I mean, I would need to watch it again thinking about what you're saying, mm-hmm. or just think about the movie, but I'm just going off of the three times that I saw it in theaters. I don't remember ever having that feeling. But if you're going, like, let's say hypothetically you're right, then I think you will be pleased with this movie because it goes much deeper into Tony's head, mm-hmm. and we get much more of a performance out of him of what's going on in his life.
And are all the rumors about this being the darker Iron Man, like the dark one, you know, usually reserved for the second movie in the trilogy, are all those is it sufficiently darker? Or is it,
yeah, I'd say it's you know, for a superhero movie that's supposed to play all over the world and be okay for anyone to go see, yeah, it's I would say this is the darkest of. Oh yeah, this is definitely the darkest of the three.
Okay,
but you know, still a great time, and like I said, very funny and just very cool. The effects were. I don't usually comment on effects, but you know, they just keep getting better and better as we go on, and now they've got all that Disney money to throw at it.
Oh yeah,
I think it's one of the best things that have happened in the past few years is Marvel getting their own studio.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, now they're under Disney, which I still think is a good thing. I think that the freedom that Marvel has to choose the right people for each job really excites me.
Yeah, I mean, Disney movie division is, I think they kind of let freedom reign for the most part.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to have to worry about too much Disneyfication of that sort of stuff.
I think with how popular Geek is right now, I don't think Disney is going to, and with how much money the Avengers made, they're not going to mess with it anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly.
Cracked, I don't want to like plug another website, but Cracked has an interesting article about why they feel that the superhero bubble is going to burst. And I mean, anyone, and they're just talking about, you know, bubbles always burst, and they're kind of contrasting what's going on with superheroes right now with the idea of the blockbuster that started in the 60s and mm-hmm. kind of went through the 70s and kind of tracing how that bubble burst, almost like a lot of spooky parallels between what happened then and what's happening now. So it's definitely worth a read.
All right. Well, we will link it in the post there. Yeah. I mean, yeah, superhero movies have been going strong now since, you know, early 2000s, since Spider-Man 1, I'd say. And yeah, now it seems like, I mean, there was a dip, but I mean, you know, they've been kind of had the lion's share of the marketplace besides maybe fantasy there in the early 2000s. But since about 2006, if you will, like they've been going strong. And now it just seems like there's a new superhero movie almost like every other week.
Right.
So clearly it's getting to be that time where the bubble could burst. So
absolutely. And yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Superhero movies are, I mean, I don't even know what I think, you know, what cop movies were in the 80s. Like these are the big action movies during the summer that everyone is going to see.
All right, going from one rich alcoholic to another. Yeah, I thought about that one when I was going to sleep last night.
Solid.
Let's go to, let's talk about some Mad Men.
Yes, The Flood.
This was the episode in which Martin Luther King's assassination was announced at a gala event. And the way it was announced was kind of ridiculous, considering they were holding the announcement until the end.
I thought it was, this is just typical, Mad Men, ridiculous research they do. This is what happened. Apparently this is exactly where Paul Newman was. He was on stage. He was interrupted, in real life. This is where he was when that happened. I just thought that was interesting.
I mean, I'm not surprised that I'm not surprised that they did that research, because then I think they would have just thrown Paul Newman in there if it wasn't accurate. Plus, I'm not surprised that they were trying to hold the announcement until the end.
Right.
You know, it seems like a very white 60s things to do, I suppose.
Well, even, I mean, this is, again, one of those things that even, you know, for us who, we're going to be the last people who remember life, and not just like being alive, but like social interactions, you know, being a kid before the internet was part of everything. Mm-hmm. So it's weird that even though I grew up with that, it's still, you can't, like, I can't wrap my mind around a decision like that to, like, that you could even possibly control information in a room of that many people.
Oh, yeah. There's no way you could do it now without, like, physically taking everyone's cell phone away from them or something.
Yeah, or, like, dropping an EMP in the middle of a ballroom.
Exactly. I thought it was interesting to see how the Mad Men characters kind of dealt with the Martin Luther King assassination. It was very much like... how they treated people, or I guess black people, if you will, African Americans. They treated them very much like a friend's mom had died or something, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm so sorry, but it doesn't really affect me that much. And well, I mean,
I agree with the first part, but I don't think it's so much that it doesn't affect me, because even though. It may not directly affect them. You could see the sadness that it was causing for everyone. And even if you want to look at it in selfish terms, I think no matter what, they were all afraid of what this was going to mean for them, for their city.
It was more about them, though. It wasn't about Martin Luther King or anything. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
And it definitely felt more, I mean, I guess maybe nuisance. A nuisance isn't the right word, but it definitely felt like... they were more...
Well, yeah, because, I think you're right. These are people who... This is new for them that this could even happen, and they don't know how to process it. These are people who are used to dealing with their self-absorbed issues, and it whenever the real world creeps in for these characters, it's always kind of like a gut punch. So, you're right that they all were just trying to, like, oh, do I need to stop being selfish for a second? Do I, we saw everyone kind of reevaluating what was important to them and who was important to them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, well, we can get to that later, but I just think in general, it was very funny to see how this, not funny, but there was a lot of comedy to see how this affected the relationships of a lot of people we've seen who have had kind of tense relationships this season already.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed like... I mean, it had different effects on different people, of course. For some of them, it seemed like it could be a call to action. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I guess especially for Betty, it seemed like... I mean, Betty and Henry, their relationship.
Sure.
If Henry ends up going through with, running for the state senate seat or whatever. I mean, definitely that part seemed like a sort of a call to action of everything is, it's been a slow downward slide the entire decade. Starting with sort of the JFK assassination, and now this. So it seems like it's maybe a call to action. I don't know. How did you feel about the comparisons between the JFK assassination episode where Rogers' daughter was getting married and this one?
I thought that this was actually a more optimistic episode. It seemed like when they did with the JFK assassination, that one really hurt these people.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, again, JFK wasn't someone that any of them were that fond of before he died, I thought it was interesting how it kind of pulled...
JFK was definitely a member of their world, unlike Martin Luther King. So.
Right, but I just mean, like, even when he was coming up, even though, these guys are pretty much unspoken Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, he was part of their rich white culture. And I think that it was interesting how it kind of pulled people apart. Betty and Don were kind of on the way to mending, and that JFK assassination kind of like snapped Betty out of it and kind of caused rifts between, you know, caused the demise of her relationship with Don and kind of caused rifts between people. And it was nice that this one seemed to be kind of the opposite, where someone who maybe wasn't on the mind of these characters, and let's not lump them all together, because this was a big deal to a lot of the younger characters.
Yeah, especially Pete, which we'll get to.
Yeah, and to Ginsburg. Mm-hmm. I would say Ginsburg more than Pete. I think Ginsburg had a genuine affection for Martin Luther King and anyone like him who's kind of challenging the status quo.
Yeah.
But in general, this wasn't a person who was on the forefront of these characters' minds. And his death kind of united a lot of these people, kind of got people stopping to think about what's important to me and who do I cherish, and who we saw, you know, Don so worried about his mistress, and Peggy kind of finding peace with her relationship. And of course the hilarious moment when Joan tried to put her arms around Dawn after almost firing her in the last episode.
Yeah,
it was a very shocking moment for Dawn, where she's like, is she going to kill me? Is she going to hurt me? So yeah, it was just interesting to see how it affected people differently this time around.
I mean, it could be too, where the JFK one was kind of, I mean, even though I guess many of them have been through Cold War stuff before that and stuff, the JFK assassination was kind of the first modern day, you know, event that had such a huge impact on everything, you know, where America was seemingly invincible. And of course, the president is usually the poster boy for America. And so when JFK died, you know, it showed the chinks in America's armor, you know, showed America was not infallible and could be hurt. And maybe now with this Martin Luther King one, you know, they've kind of already been, at least the older people have kind of already been through that with JFK. So maybe they weren't as affected as a group, you know, affected by the event, at least, because they had gone through that.
It wasn't as it didn't seem as impossible this time around, and I'm sadly that's just going to keep growing in this world as we know, to the point where we're not surprised whatever we see. We're rarely surprised anyway of the, you know, tragedy that we see on the news. But I think, and as we know that more and more this year, these things are going to kind of keep happening, so they might even become numb to it. Who knows?
Well, I think there was that one line in there. I can't remember who said it, but I want to say there was one line, or at least the sentiment of the line was kind of like, well, we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, that was said a few times in the episode, where people were kind of saying, we knew this is Peggy's secretary said, I knew this was going to happen. He knew this was going to happen. And there were a lot of little lines like, who would do this? And someone would say, you know, who did this, or how did this happen? You know how this happened. Like, it was a lot of, we knew this was coming, but we're shocked that it happened.
Mm-hmm. It should be interesting too. I don't know if we'll get like a standalone episode like we did with this. But as we know, Robert Kennedy, RFK, he gets assassinated later in the same year.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if we do get a standalone episode of that assassination, I feel like that could maybe have the biggest impact of, you know, maybe this triumvirate of assassination episodes. Well, I mean, I think, you know, the JFK one was shocking, you know, and they just hadn't seen it before. This one, I mean, as we said, people kind of knew it was coming a little bit, and they had already seen the JFK one. But then, like, I guess it's a rule of three sort of thing, where, you know, you kind of need that third instance to really hammer a point home. Whereas when RFK gets assassinated, if they do a standalone episode, I feel like it'll be that true turning point for all of the older characters, at least, where, like, the world isn't the same as it used to be, you know, that sort of cliched moment. And I think it'll just kind of be almost more chaos for everyone, because they're like, oh my god, this happened again so soon after, you know, the MLK one. And I think maybe things could really, you know, they'll be maybe not because it was RFK who was assassinated, but just because it was yet another famous political figure that had been assassinated in such a short period of time.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I can't imagine how the show will handle it, or how these characters will handle it either.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's see. What I mean, we mentioned Pete and Harry's little tete-a-tete, I guess. That was awesome. It was a great scene. And it was also a great scene, too, because Bert was in it and was completely ignored.
Yeah.
You know, which sort of shows, again, how the old guard is being replaced by the new.
Well, they listened to him, but then kept going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before, Bert would have, you know, they would have just stopped.
Yeah.
But now, you know, Bert is kind of, I mean, Bert's character is kind of just this weird sort of aloof guy anyway, so maybe, you know,
yeah,
doesn't
these
have
guys
nearly
don't
as much power as he did in the old agency, so
you're right. But I mean, especially the people don't bow down to them, you know, to Don and Roger and Bert anymore, but also, you know, Pete and Harry are two people who kind of feel like they own SCDP just as much as anybody, so they don't really, like, you know, just, like, kind of bow in the presence of them. But, yeah, it was a really funny exchange because I couldn't help but think about kind of, you know, what happened in Boston during this episode. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people did, just, you know, the most recent, like, national, like, Jesus, you know, tragedy moment that we had. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. I thought that scene kind of highlighted how people – The side that we like to pretend doesn't happen when these things happen, where people really make it about themselves,
yeah,
and people get on their soapboxes. You know, Pete, obviously, like everyone, was upset about the assassination, but he really was, he was performing in that office. And I don't mean the actor, I mean Pete was performing,
yes, yes,
for, you know, to seem like a good guy. And because this was just something that he was dealing with his personal life.
I mean, his personal life has basically gone down the shitter, so
yeah.
He's probably trying to do a little, at least, damage control within the office to make it seem, you know, to make them maybe worship him a little bit more like Trudy used to before all of this happened.
Yeah, and then, yeah, just the way he reacted and calling Harry a racist out of nowhere. It's just kind of ridiculous. And there are the people, we see this too, there are the people who, like Harry, are just kind of like, well, why does the world need to stop for this? Can't we just keep going? Like, we are going to get over this eventually, and life is going to keep going. Why, you know, why should I stop now?
Well, Harry's argument was much more self-interested than that, but yeah,
well,
I mean,
what I mean.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He's kind of like, why shouldn't I just keep going? You know, because eventually we all will. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just start now? Like, why do I have to take this time? This is inconveniencing me.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely inconveniencing him, especially since after last week's power play, I suppose. You know, he's
yeah,
butting heads a little bit more with upper management. So,
I think that was going on in a lot of the episode. Just the general idea of deciding, how do we handle this? Do we stop and stare at it, or do we ignore it and keep going?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree. It seemed to be a generational divide with that as well, whereas Don and I don't know. I guess Don is the main older generational guy. Kind of just was watching, you know, sitting by the TV and watching. Whereas many of the younger people, you know, Megan and who was it? Someone else, I can't remember, but Megan, you know, felt the need to act and go to the vigil or whatever,
mm-hmm.
while Don was, you know, wanted to distance himself from it, I suppose. Or
Don doesn't like
also
more.
Distances everything. So
yeah, this is how he handles everything. But I think the old Don, and even Don of just like 2 years ago, would just turn the TV off. He wouldn't even be watching it. But he too, we saw in this episode, is kind of, just in general, and with things like this, is starting to question his role in this world and realizing that he's in a world that he doesn't fully understand anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was interesting to see the different reactions to it.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely seemed to be bewildered by the events instead of, you know, maybe not caring or just being like, you know, whatever it happened. So,
yeah,
you know, things are definitely, and I mean, oh, Betty and Henry as well. I mean, Henry went into the fire, but, you know, they kind of, I mean, Henry's story of the mayor just grinning from ear to ear, you know, like as if nothing mm-hmm. had happened, you know, is just a great image of kind of, you know, the generational divide, perhaps, of the old people and the new people. So.
Yeah, and we just, in general, I mean, I don't even think it crossed. It just kind of depends on who you are, old or young. People react to these things differently, and you get people getting angry at other people at how they're reacting to these things, and that kind of almost becomes as big a part of the story as what happened itself. We talk about in the news just as much what happened now as to how people, how officials, how popular figures are reacting to it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can look at Newtown or, you know, the Boston bombings recently. It comes just as big a part of the story as, well, how did these people react to it?
Yeah, exactly. This episode also saw a little bit more of Ginsburg.
Yeah,
which is definitely nice. He seemed to have almost been swept under the rug until this episode, for this season at least. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, the fact that his dad set him up on this blind date. I mean, the entire Ginsburg thing was pretty hilarious until, you know, the reaction to the announcement of Martin Luther King. I don't know if
what
you
want
to add to this Ginsburg.
Other than
he clearly makes
a
hell of a first impression, that's for sure.
We got the interesting tidbit that he is still a virgin.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting. I this is just another one of those things you never know with this show. You know, if with the smaller cast or earlier seasons, I feel like a lot of times in these scenarios they would have kept going with him. We didn't really follow him past finding out about the assassination, whereas a lot of episodes we have these people who are, I think generally we get people who are in situations like this that are awkward or they don't want to be in them, and then something like this happens, and then we kind of watch them either pull apart or come together in the tragedy, which Ginsburg's father, his little speech gave us the name of the episode about the flood, which I thought was really cool. The whole idea, you know, when his father said, you know, this is the right time to get together with women.
Yeah, exactly.
This is exactly when you should be doing it, because the animals went two by two in the flood. And I think that was just kind of talking about the general idea, the one that was permeating throughout this episode of how these things affect us and how they bring people together, or how they split apart.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just talking about you. What is your gut reaction to these situations? Do you run from people? Do you cling to people? And we didn't really get much more out of his relationship with that girl of where it will go, if anywhere.
Yeah, or I mean, who knows if we even see more focus on Ginsburg, you know, after this episode. So
yeah, who knows?
But yeah, no, I mean, and plus his dad had the hilarious line right after that where he said, "You don't want to go on the ark with your dad."
Yeah.
So I remember laughing at that fairly heartily.
That was funny.
Yeah, no, that was good.
His dad is a very funny character.
This episode did have some surprisingly funny moments, including Roger's friend, the insurance guy, the really weird insurance guy.
Serial killer extraordinaire.
Yeah, that guy was nuts. And I mean, you know, besides him injecting a little hilarity and you know, kind of adding to the theme of, you know, everything's going to shit, you know, his pitch for the Molotov cocktail or whatever. Insurance.
It was just like a really funny. This is just another one of those things that impresses me so much about this show, is how sad and apocalyptic the first half of the episode can be, and then they inject all this humor about just people reacting to this. It is kind of just like another Life Goes On kind of feeling it gives the episode. But the way he came in and he's just so out there.
Oh, yeah.
When he when he said, you know, like, I'm trying to communicate without speaking, but apparently it's not working. And Roger's like, it never works.
Oh, it was so good. I mean, it's great that Mad Men can have so... I mean, I'm pretty sure my jaw was, you know, just like on the floor while I was watching this just because how weird this guy was.
Yeah.
And I mean, it shows definitely how far Roger's fallen as well, that like the only new business that he can bring in is this guy that like clearly you don't want to be in business with at all.
Yeah. So, it's true. Roger is kind of was grasping at straws there and didn't even really seem...
I mean, he didn't even really
committed.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't even committed to it, but also the fact that I'm pretty sure that's the only new bit of business he's brought in quite some, you know, at least by himself in quite some time. You know, it's very telling of how his career is going over at the new agency.
Also hilarious in that scene again. Just I keep loving Stan more and more each episode. He was the one who just couldn't keep it together in the room. While that guy was talking, Stan just started laughing in his face when that serial killer was pitching his ideas.
Oh, yeah. No, Stan is great.
Yeah.
He's great. You don't need a lot of Stan, but what you get is gold.
Yeah. That's what he tells the ladies. Shut up. Just shut up.
How about how about Peggy and Abe there? Their relationship kind of... meeting a new or going to the next level, I guess, at least opening up, I suppose, on his opinions.
Yeah, well, it was a cool scene. I didn't get their final scene the first time I watched it. I didn't get what changed in Peggy at the end. She was acting really nuts.
Well, like, I mean, first, before we even get to that, I just wanted to point out that like the image of Abe leaving at the gala. And then just Don and Megan, you know, sort of hugging, and then Peggy always alone, just, you know, like twiddling her thumbs. I thought that was a really good image, and it kind of juxtaposed.
It was. I was hoping that we would get a scene of Don taking Peggy home, having a conversation, but I don't know if we're going to – I don't know if that ended up happening. I really want to see what's going on between Don and Peggy.
Yeah, I mean, they've always had some good chats, so it would be nice to at least for them to sit down over a drink or something maybe and hash some things out. But anyway, as you were going on about the last scene between Abe and Peggy.
Oh, just that I didn't realize what it was, that because she was acting really, like, halfway through the conversation, she suddenly, her demeanor changed, and she looked like she was dealing with an emotion that she couldn't handle. And it was clear to me the second time. I mean, maybe it was for everyone, but I didn't get it till the second time that it was clear that this was the first time that Abe, or I guess anyone, had ever said to Peggy, you know, I imagine our kids doing this. He's very casually mentioned, like, well, I pictured us raising our kids somewhere else. And I think she had been kind of looking at him as a child lately, like this season, and kind of not taking him seriously. And I think that bit of affection, not of affection, but that just, it was a casual promise of a future to her, of her getting the other side of things that she'd kind of given up on relationships in that way. She's much more career focused now. But it was cool to see her reaction to it. She had like a couple of like weird tics. She didn't know how to handle it. And then you saw her kind of try to be more like Trudy towards him in the last bit of the scene. She kind of like came up to him, and when he's like, oh, I got to keep working. Cause at the beginning of the scene, he said he has to keep working. She got really pissed. Mm-hmm. At the end of the scene, she comes over and like strokes the back of his head, and he's like, I got to keep working. And she did this like, oh, by all means kind of gesture. She was trying to kind of play the wife after he said that. And I thought that was really cool little, they're so good at showing big steps in a relationship with like little gestures and moments like that on that show.
Well, I mean, Abe, you know, it's clearly not, he's definitely a go with the flow kind of guy. And it seems like maybe even, even at work, Peggy has kind of reached this level where no one can really order her to do, or like, you know, the opinions of others don't matter as much to her. You know, because she does have the power over at work, and clearly she's always had the power with Abe. So, I mean, I think she just kind of – I think she also just kind of likes having someone to go up against as well, you know, as opposed to just, you know, always being top dog or whatever. Or you know, she's always – her character is very much kind of like always struggling to get better. And she had reached kind of this point where, you know, everything – I mean, maybe not the pinnacle of what she can become, but like – this really easy plateau where she's gained enough power. And so I think she also kind of responded to the fact that, you know, someone, you know, she's now, Abe is now making an opinion and like, you know, she kind of likes that, I think, too, clearly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Abe making a decision, I guess. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you on the future thing as well, where Peggy,
it was definitely when he said, I pictured us having our kids, and that was when she kind of like looked like she'd just been punched in the not but in a good way, like she had just won the lottery. She perked up and didn't know how to handle him saying that.
Well, I mean, her apartment too, the apartment search, I guess, or the apartment bit as well, is just another good example of you know, kind of the distance that this world was feeling with the Martin Luther King assassination as well. I mean, it was almost like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that, but it makes perfect sense when her realtor calls her and is just like, yeah, you know, now that this happened and Harlem's like basically in blazes, we could probably get this place for even cheaper than what we, you know, than the asking price. And Peggy's reaction to that was just like, really? You know, she got kind of excited and she was like, but no, you know, is that right? Or, you know, so, I mean, I thought that was, you know, that was just another instance of that.
Uh-huh.
Before we go, I mean, we definitely have to mention Don taking Bobby to Planet of the Apes. And then,
that was great.
And then the little monologue he had at the end afterwards.
Yeah.
It was awesome to see Bobby's mind completely blown by Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know, something that's reached a huge level of camp since it came out.
I'd seen Don wasn't reacting too much to it, but I think he was a little stunned by it too.
But, oh yeah, yeah.
I don't think he's not so easily blown away by ideas. It's his job. I don't think he's ever the guy in the theater going, "Oh shit!"
No. He's definitely not jumping out of his chair or chortling all the while. So, but I mean, yeah, that was a great scene there. And of course the Planet of the Apes kind of adds to the theme of the world blowing itself up. And, you know, this is what we're left with is talking apes and enslaved humans or whatever.
Uh huh. And I liked the quick edit to them at the theater going right off of Don's line asking Bobby, what exactly did your mother say? And him saying, I'm not allowed to watch television. And then immediately cutting to the two of them in the theater.
Yeah, exactly. That was great too. And then of course, I guess the biggest moment of that scene, besides the fact that they were allowed to stay for a second showing, which wouldn't happen today, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
Was of course Bobby saying to the janitor, you know, that he was sorry, or I can't remember what exactly he said, but
he was an usher.
Yeah, the usher.
I used to be a movie theater usher. I take offense.
Yeah, no, that was me blowing it there.
It was great. Bobby saying, people go to the movies when they're really sad, or everyone wants to go to the movies when they're really sad. That was I thought a fantastic moment. It was, and I'm sure that obviously that's what Don was referring to in his speech that I guess we'll talk about in a second to Megan, but that it was in that moment that he was looking at him that was a really simple but also really insightful thing to say, that he would even have the instinct to make the usher feel better. He was trying to make him feel better by saying, like, don't think that these people are here, they don't give a shit, that they're just enjoying a movie and you have to clean up after them. We're all here because we're all sad. We all feel bad about what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, you know, Bobby is becoming like a real person. you know, when you're a little kid, you shy away from strangers, you know, all the time. And the fact that Bobby even reached out to, like, a stranger, you know, it's definitely a big step as well. And it was, I mean, it was great, too, to see, you know, as we said, Bobby's mind was blown by the end of Planet of the Apes. And then Don's mind got blown there when Bobby said that. I mean, you could see his reaction, like, you know, just the machinations of, like, the gravity of what had just happened going on in Don's mind. And then, of course, the end monologue there, where Megan, you know, starts laying into Don, and then Don just completely, you know, he tells her exactly, you know, what's going on, which I guess it doesn't happen all that much with Don. But yeah, no, that monologue was great. I mean, it was like very truthful, you know, it seemed like a very truthful monologue, especially for, you know, since, I mean, I don't have kids. I don't think you have any kids.
I do not.
But the common mindset, I guess, is that kids mean more to the mother because they have that instant connection with them from growing inside them, and they've always been, like, the ones that have raised them and stuff, whereas the dads, you know, they're just kind of, I mean, they did their part, and now they're just kind of on the side, you know, doing what they can maybe, but it's not nearly as big a deal for them as it is for the moms.
It was also, for something that is so, like you said, it was just kind of like true to life. It was cool to have a character talking about that, because that is something that we don't even talk about on TV. It's almost so taboo. It's rarely ever brought up, the idea of just not having that feeling of love for your children, or like not going the way of, usually on TV, it's always, you say whatever you're going to say because you don't know, but once the baby's born and it grabs your finger, then you'll be in love with it forever. And we see everyone go through that, but it was cool that bravery to have someone say, you know, I didn't feel that. I faked a lot of my emotions as I do with everyone. And this is the moment, like when, like you said, when he's actually a real person and I see him do something that it really is an echo of Don, that he did feel immense love for his son.
Exactly. And I mean, yeah, definitely Don definitely fakes a lot of emotions. And so it must be, you know, even more intense when he finally feels the emotion that he's faked, you know, that he was saying, you know, like he was saying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was just completely affected by what had happened, because it just, you know, when that thing just clicks in there, you know, you go from, I mean, you know, it's very much a relationship where, you know, you like someone or whatever, and then maybe just one instant you're all of a sudden just like, oh my God, you know, I'm deeply connected, or I love this person, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, I thought that was, I mean, and Don too, I think it's kind of the perfect character to bring this up in a movie or a TV, because, you know, he is kind of a dick, but we still root for him and we still like him for the most part.
Yeah.
And, you know, him being able to articulate perfectly what he's feeling and then just to be so affected by what had happened, you know, I feel like he's probably the perfect character for that to be, you know, to at least have a monologue about that on in a TV or a movie sort of setting. So
yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I guess this also plays into what a couple episodes ago, where Don didn't seem all that affected by Megan's miscarriage, and you know, Megan was clearly broken up about it, and it was affecting her hugely. You know, but Don was just like, you know, whatever you want is whatever you want. I don't really care.
Well, yeah, it was that, and there was also the added relief that he thought he was about to get busted for cheating.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
So, like, I think that just kind of, like, added to it, that it was kind of like a, man, as long as she wasn't about to say what I thought she was about to say, I don't care what it was.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think we've covered Mad Men. This past week's episode, at least.
Yeah.
What else? Is there anything else you want to say about it?
No. I say the same thing every week, but the show is incredible, and I thought this was a perfect handling of showing how something like this would affect everyday people. I thought they did a good job of balancing the kind of the obvious tragic of it, but also putting a lot of comedy in the episode, I think was important. And yeah. They nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's going to do it for the podcast this week. Next week, I'm sure we'll be coming at you again with some more Game of Thrones and Mad Men talk, and maybe a little something else. Who knows? Maybe Alan will be going to another advanced screening of something.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we'll talk to you guys later.
Bag it up, folks.
Oh wow, that was worse. That was worse than I thought it was gonna be.
It was worse than I thought. It came out worse than I thought it would come out.
All right, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Sorry.